FW presents Panel by Panel, the show that dissects a single comic book panel from the last 85 years of comics history. I'm Siskoid, and our panelist today is Gareth Madeley. Welcome to the show, Madeley.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me on.
It's almost my resolution of the year. I was looking at all my contacts and people I talk to on Twitter, etc., all the time, and I'm why haven't I podcasted with some of these people, especially considering that we've known each other, well, known, you know.
Internet known for a long time now.
Yeah, a long time, because I don't know how we came across one another, probably a Doctor Who comic book thing.
Yeah, it would have.
But I think we bonded over the fact that we both live in areas that have bilingual issues.
Absolutely.
So, so you're in Wales. Are you Cardiff? Is that...
I'm a couple of miles north of Cardiff. I'm born and raised in a place called Caerphilly, which is famous for having a really big castle.
Oh.
And also famous for a brand of cheese. And we're so proud of the brand of cheese, we literally have a statue of the cheese in the middle of the town.
Wow.
And people keep thinking I'm taking the mick when I say that, but it's absolutely true. Right in the middle of town, opposite the castle.
Is it a whole wheel, or is it like...
It's like a wheel with a triangle wedged out of it.
Oh, yeah.
Because otherwise it'd just be a big concrete circle. Mind you, which isn't really much better than having a great big cheese in the middle.
Yeah, but, how absurd is it, was my question, I guess. Let's go into our randomized series of choices using my database of available comic book materials, either physical or digital. And prior to the recording, we rolled up a year, a month, a comic on the stands that month, a page, and finally a panel. And in this case, what have we got for Madeley? We rolled the year, 1991, the month of May. Among all the comics out that month, the revolving finger falls on Shade the Changing Man, number 13, actual cover date, July, actually, by writer Peter Milligan and artists Chris Bacalo and Mark Pennington. It will be page 15 of 24 and panel 7 of 7. It's a weird one. You can find it in the show notes at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Before we get into this surreal panel, let's call it surreal, this was not quite the time for Vertigo. The imprint won't launch until 1993. But were you a Vertigo reader, or were you reading this UK invasion? I guess it's not, you know, you're in the UK.
I wasn't really reading Vertigo at the I wasn't really following this kind of thing at the time. I was much more of a, I'd have been about 12 or 13 at the time. So I was sort of like just on the cusp of starting to read the more mature readers kind of thing. What's interesting about sort of like the British invasion and stuff for me, like everything that followed, like Neil Gaiman and Grant Morrison, things like that, I really, really got into it years afterwards. It's like, I think when it first came out, I was probably just a little too young to really appreciate it. And then a few years later, mostly when I was buying like the collections, like the graphic novel collections and things, that's when I started to read things like Hellblazer and Sandman. And I think I needed to be a little bit older to really get into them and really sort of like get what they were talking about.
And for the shop to sell them to you.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, it was what was great when I was about that time, there's a library in Caerphilly, and it's so much a part of my secret origin of why I love so much stuff, because all the things that they used to have in this library, so much of it went on to like sort of like influence everything because of course at that time, late 80s, early 90s, Doctor Who had been cancelled, and it was sort of like not, and stuff hadn't quite come out on VHS. You know, things weren't super available, but Caerphilly Library had loads of the old Target novels. So I used to read all the Doctor Who Target novels to the extent that I am certain there are Doctor Who episodes today that I haven't seen, but I think I've seen because I've read the Target.
Right.
It's like sort of like smushed into that sort of like early memory of like having read them and thinking I've watched them. But at the time, the library was sort of like, it was in like this porter cabin, basically. It wasn't a very big library, but it was set, it was like very specifically split into two. Yeah, you went in, you had the desk, and on one side you had like the kids department, and then the other side you had the grown-ups department. And so you'd go in, and as a kid you go to the kids department, and it was like there was like an invisible barrier between the two. It was just like, that's the forbidden zone, you can't go into the adult zone. But they had the graphic novel section like in the adult part. And it wasn't just like the grown-up graphic novels. It was all, you know, it was everything. If you wanted to read Batman or Superman or anything, you had to go to the grown-up section. And that's when I realized this magical barrier could be breached. It's like, no one will stop you. It's like, you can just go into like the adult section and read like the comics and stuff. And after that, oh, well, there's nothing stopping you looking at Stephen King. There's nothing stopping you looking at, like, you know, the grown-up books and stuff. And that was brilliant. That was like finding a magic spell, you know, to just like open a whole new world kind of thing. It was sort of through that that I started reading like the Vertigo graphic novels, because no one was keeping that. He's like, you're right, you probably wouldn't sell some of this stuff to, you wouldn't sell Hellblazer to a kid if you're in a shop, but nothing stopping you going and reading it in the library. So I read a lot of stuff I probably wasn't meant to be reading at that time, sort of like as a minor. That minor as in young, not minor as in I wasn't literally a coal miner. We, you know, we were long past that point, even though it was South Wales.
Even in
we were
Wales.
Still using child labour in 1992.
No green death for you.
That was one of them. That was one of the books.
I imagine. So personally, I'm a little older, so this kind of comic sort of came out when I was going to college. And I got really into it, you know, like, it's like I missed the first year of all these comics, and then I had to go back and buy them. You know, as back issues. But for me, Vertigo was sort of the, I don't know, it was better before it became Vertigo in many ways. Sandman kept up the quality. But Doom Patrol, Animal Man, Hellblazer maybe, Shade the Changing Man, which we'll discuss, Swamp Thing. I thought it was like a downgrade when they went to Vertigo. Like they had new writers and it wasn't as good as the pre-Vertigo stuff. But I was a big, big Vertigo reader though.
I think what's weird thinking back to me is so many of the Vertigo writers came out of 2000 AD,
yes,
which was of course the weekly British science fiction magazine that's most famous for Judge Dredd, but that did a lot of other things. A lot of the writers got their break there. You know, the 2000 AD did a lot of Alan Moore stuff, a lot of Grant Morrison stuff, a lot of Garth Ennis stuff. But I read a lot of 2000 AD when I was a kid, so I don't, and considering it was sort of in the same vein maybe as the Vertigo stuff, I'm surprised I didn't start reading the Vertigo stuff earlier, because I definitely was too young reading Judge Dredd. But it was so much a part of like British comics culture, certainly in the 80s. And I'm saying comics culture, it wasn't quite like geek culture now, but you know what I mean? You know, yeah. It was a big part of like sort of like nerd culture. 2000 AD was like hugely influential and all of that. But I definitely read a lot of 2000 AD, which is in many ways sort of like a great gateway drug to like the more Vertigo stuff, because I mean, they took, people like Grant Morrison took so much of that 2000 AD sensibility and put them into American comics. You know, it's a very different kind of thing to superhero comics, how they would have been at that time. You know, I don't want to call them unsophisticated, but it was definitely sort of like an injection of something a bit weirder and a bit stranger, which, you know, is completely clear from this panel that has been randomly chosen.
Right. Peter Milligan, who, I don't know, I'm trying to think of like earlier, Johnny Nemo would probably be his big one in the UK.
The funny thing about Peter Milligan is he's probably, of the British invasion guys, he's probably the person I've read the least of, only because I know he got a lot more famous later on when he did the X-Force stuff, which just wasn't really my cup of tea. And I know he did a few other bits and pieces, but he did some Batman stories that were absolutely superb. He did I think it was Detective Comics he had a run on, maybe the main title as well, but he did Dark Knight, Dark City, which is brilliant. That is such a good Batman story. It's an absolute classic Batman story, and one that went on to be really sort of important, because it was, he was the one who introduced Barbatos, the sort of like evil bat god who has haunted Gotham for hundreds of years. That was introduced by Peter Milligan, and of course Barbatos has gone on to be very important in modern comics continuity through Grant Morrison and Scott Snyder, but also is sort of the origin for giant bat things turning up in visions in Batman films. So Peter Milligan might be the only person who've inspired like key scenes in both Batman Forever and Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice.
Hmm. And yet I feel like he's the maybe the sort of the forgotten one.
Absolutely, yeah.
His name is not tied to some of these huge projects that Morrison or Alan Moore or Garth Ennis have been associated with.
Yeah, no, absolutely. He's definitely, he just didn't have the, but I don't think he ever really had like, well, X-Force was big, mind. X-Force caused a bit of a wave, didn't it? But in the same way that sort of like Garth Ennis went on to have like, do Preacher and now The Boys and, you know, Grant Morrison has too many signature comics to even sort of like mention. I'm not sure Peter Milligan ever had something that was like really like, yeah, this is the big hit. This is the, you know, the big thing. But I do, he strikes me as the kind of writer that people who do appreciate him really appreciate him. I think he, because he did Hellblazer stuff later on as well, didn't he?
I know he did. So he did The Animal Man after Grant Morrison left it. Every miniseries in Vertigo early on started with the letter E.
Yeah.
That was him, Enigma, and anyway, there are others. But yeah, X-Force, Ecstatics. Anyway, let's look at this panel here. We're almost avoiding it, it seems.
Well, the thing about this panel is, I mean, I tell you what's brilliant about it is, if you wanted to sort of like encapsulate that whole era in one panel, you could probably use this panel as the illustration. It's like almost a parody of
the Vertigo style. Yeah,
absolutely. It's like, from what I could tell, it's two eels dressed up as vicars talking to an old man who's in bed and saying, George Crumpings, you're under arrest. And that's it. I don't know if they're eels or fish or... But they definitely dressed up as vicars.
I really tried to find out if they were actual fish. So I didn't see them as eels. I thought maybe carps. Because look at the one on the right. It's got a little beard. It's got they call a barbel, which carp have, but black carp don't. I swear to God, I sent this picture to a number of fish experts. And it seems it's an invention. None of them have this like really well-drawn lip.
Not even a real fish?
I don't think so. It's it looks, I mean, yeah, it's not a fish that we could identify. It's a stylized fish. They've got like this, they're blackish, but they've got the lip. It's white with a very well-drawn line around it. So it feels like maybe it's, you know, it's a fish from a painting or something. I don't know. I could not identify it.
and they've got like a white reverend's dog collar on.
Right.
So they're definitely priests or ministers of some kind. And they've got like big black robes. And they're arresting an old man, a bald old man who's got a bit of gray hair and is lying in bed.
Yes.
Called George Crumpings.
A great British name. there are no Crumpings over here for sure.
I mean, they could have just run a random generator of ideas to come up with this panel. I mean, it could have just been like, I don't know. Oh yeah, they're just living pizza dressed up as pharaohs talking to an old man. And like, and at that point, Karen Berger's like, yeah, bugger it, go for it, why not? I want more of that gaming money, keep it coming. Oh. Hang on, I think we've got a visitor.
You've got sounds.
Something's pounding on the door.
Kids or pets?
Kids, pets, possibly a poltergeist. I think about my daughter. Sorry, carry on.
They are priests because we're looking at this without context, and I don't really know the context.
I don't want to know the context.
But the next cover has another bunch of fish, and it calls them... fish priests. Okay, they're priests. Even though they're arresting someone, so some kind of inquisition. I don't know what's going on exactly. Probably George Crumpings ate too soon before going to bed. This would be the kind of stuff that I would dream.
Definitely got that quality to it.
Yeah. One thing I like, whatever's happening, is that George is naked. He's got like a little sheet, and you can sort of see his thumb or part of his hand. Just over his face. Like, we don't see his face. You know, we just see the side of the head from the back. I think he's pulling that sheet over because you don't want to, you know, when you're getting arrested by the fish police.
Well, I know. And they're obviously fish of God.
That's an interesting point. Yeah. That the Christian symbol before the cross was a fish. A Jesus fish. So is that the joke?
Who knows?
The visual pun. But you really don't want the fish police to see your nethers is apparently the thing that George is thinking. So, oh no, I gotta.
It's like, George, I think you got bigger problems right now
than hiding your nakedness. That's for sure. Another thing I like is the effect on the robes. Because there's like these blue streaks on it, but they're supposed to be a sort of reflection or a sheen, but they kind of look like water dripping off of them.
Because who is it? It was Chris Bacalo was the artist. Wasn't it? I mean, that's interesting in itself because Chris Bacalo, of course, went on to be one of the big X-Men artists, wasn't it? He was like huge at Marvel for a long time, and he had a very cartoony sort of manga-inspired style, very distinctive. Which he obviously isn't using here, because this is very much like your kind of your Vertigo, Brian Talbot, Richard Case, putting weird things in like really realistic, plausible kind of artwork, which is much different to what Bacalo went on to do in his later career.
Yeah, he went on to become much more himself, I guess.
Yeah.
But here, I think it's the inking. You know, whenever Mark Pennington is on him, and this is like a very early work. I don't think I'd ever seen any of Bacalo's work before Shade the Changing Man. So this is kind of launching his career, at least in America. I don't know. But Pennington has a really, like a very thin line, whereas Bacalo has a very thick line. So maybe that's the effect, especially since we're not seeing people. When I look at the faces, if I flip through the issue, which I do own, like the faces, okay, no, that's, I see Mark Bacalo there. Here we don't see any faces, so it's kind of lost in the translation.
I mean, again, it's great that because it's just before Vertigo and because it's just before sort of like computer coloring and computer lettering came in, like I say, if you showed anyone who was into this kind of stuff this panel, they would say, oh yeah, no, that's like early Vertigo, pre-Vertigo, it's one of the British Invasion ones. It's just like, it's that art style. It's that coloring as well, because of course it's not digital coloring. So it's sort of like towards the end of the hand coloring. And the scan you sent me of it as well, you can sort of see like I can smell this page. I can see the grain on it and the kind of sort of like, it wasn't quite newsprint paper, but it wasn't the glossy paper we get now.
No, yeah.
It's like, if you really wanted to deep dive into a single panel, as we're doing right now, it's like you could really get a lot from this. If you were a nostalgic old man, anyway.
Well, aren't we all? But all my listenership. But the colors are very much, you're absolutely right. I had the same note, because that coppery wall, that reddish sheet, it's darker in the room, so his skin tone is a little like a dark pink. This is very much the color palette I associate with Vertigo Comics. They all look like this.
Absolutely.
They all had that color, you know, those very somber colors compared to the four color superheroes that were sitting next to it. Mm-hmm. That's very, very, very true. And we've even got like a panel shape that is supposed to be a little upsetting.
Oh yeah, like it's got a zigzag on top, hasn't it? So it's like not your usual, it's not your square panel.
No, so you're supposed to feel like George, a little bit like the world's askew.
That certainly works.
Final comments on this odd boudoir photo of George Crumpins?
I'm not sure there's anything more to say than we have. I mean, what? It's just two giant fish coming to an arrested old man who's in bed. I assume that was literally the pitch for the issue.
All right, well, we'll see what people have to say about it. You know, there's always comments to add to the picture. Thank you, Madeley. Are there projects that we should be looking at?
You can find me at twitter.com/Madeley. That's M-A-D-E-L-E-Y. That's where I hang out and generally get myself in trouble.
Oh, yeah.
And then me and my dear friend Paul Cornish, we have an podcast that we haven't done for a while, which is my fault entirely, but we will be getting back to at some point, which is the forgotten what it's even called.
The Grim and Gritty Movie Committee.
That's it. The Grim and Gritty Movie Committee. Thank you for reminding me the title of my own podcast there. There are some episodes of it available if you want to go and listen to it. And it was good fun. And I like to think educational. And I think that's everything I've got to shill.
It's about superhero movies.
You're doing a better job. Should you just do the PR for me? Because I don't know what I'm doing. I can't remember the name of my own podcast. Can't remember what we do in it. But you should definitely listen to it.
And so the promo you're about to hear is not going to be a promo for this show. is what we're saying. Well, thank you. I'll let you go back to the margins. We'll listen to a short promo, and I'll come back with listener feedback on our previous episode.
In 2011, the Irredeemable Shag and Aqua Rob Kelly teamed up to create the Fire & Water podcast. In 2016, they teamed up with Ryan Daly, The Franklins, and Siskoid to form the Fire & Water Podcast Network. A network built on teaming up needs a show about team-ups.
Marvel Team-Up.
Yes.
The Brave and the Bold?
You know it.
Marvel 2-in-1.
It's clobbering time.
DC Comics presents.
Of course.
Supervillain Team-Up?
Good idea.
Youngblood X-Force?
Technically.
FW Team Up, only from the Fire & Water Podcast Network.
And now for your feedback on our previous episode, comment by comment. That previous episode was Happy Hooniversary, dropped on the 23rd of November, and of course had some Doctor Who content, a panel from Doctor Who Prisoners in Time number 4. My guest was Ashford Wright from the Straight Outta Gallifrey podcast. Well, I got people talking about Doctor Who comics in general. Brian Linton says, while I watched the TV series religiously as a teen, my only experience with the comics was the strips that were in the handful of Doctor Who magazine issues I'd acquired, so I enjoyed learning more about the various comic book series. One thing I noticed in the panel is that the stampeding creatures on the left are angled in such a way as they appear to be running up into the air with no ground beneath their feet. I figure that these alien creatures can either fly like Santa's reindeer or their odd trajectories are intended to add to the sense of chaos and confusion in the moment. Yes, Brian, I think that's probably it, but I also like to think of a rolling hill and animals going right over the horizon. Martin Gray says it's always a delight to hear Ashford on the network, and who better for a special edition of this all-too-irregular show? I loved your discussion of the elements in the drawing and how that talk broadened into a wider discussion of companion costumes. I think my favorite looks are Turlough's cricket sweater and Jamie's kilt. Okay. I know Ashford was referring to the fedora, but why is it a Herbert Danton hat? Google was no help. Or perhaps I misheard. Captain Entropy to the rescue, says Martin, it's Herbert Johnson, a Bond Street hatter. Their poet model was the original Indiana Jones fedora. I heard the name better and just learned all this with my own searching. Martin Gray returns to say, curse my aged ears. Thanks, Captain. That's very specific, Ashford. And Captain Entropy ends by saying, I think you should blame our American accents for making us hard to understand. It's only fair after all. Well, you know, guys, all my shows are essentially about figuring out voices and accents. That's at once a little joke about Ohadmu or not, but it's also a little joke about this very episode's Welsh-Canadian connection. On that note, let me remind you that we have a Patreon at patreon.com/FW podcast. If you like this content, want more like it, think about leaving a one-time or monthly donation. If you want to share your thoughts and leave comments, you can do that at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Would love to hear from you. And as ever, a reminder that if you'd like to do one of these short podcasts, drop me a line and we'll arrange it. You will be handed a comic book panel randomly, and we'll put it up for discussion. My thanks again to my guest, Madeley. And until we refill that seat, the panel is open.
Ask a fish head.